man. This aircon is racist.
I've never ever been a spy.
Can the VBS bank loot?
The problem is that Pinky.
I'll never subject myself to whitening. I'm listening.
Can you have consistency, Honorable Chair?
Corruption was an Olympic sport. They will always win gold.
This is not a ship.
Can you please come in?
Order.
Welcome again to the Sunday Times Politics Weekly, where we unpack the big political stories of the week. My name is Mike Siluma. My guests this week are Andisiwe Makinana, who's our political correspondent based in Cape Town, as well as our political journalist, Umawande Amashabalala. Both of them have been on the show before. Welcome to Politics Weekly, folks. Welcome, Mawande. Welcome, Andisiwe. Firstly, our top stories this week on the Sunday Times Politics Weekly. We'll start with developments at the State Capture Commission, where ex-President Jacob Zuma was wanting the chairperson, Deputy Chief Justice Raymond Zondo, to recuse himself, a request which was denied, of course. We then go to the other big story, which is the one of Shepherd Bushiri controversially skipping bail and fleeing to his native Malawi. Now, firstly, let's go to the big story that has broken this week. That have broken this week. Let's look at developments at the State Capture Commission. And I wonder, you've been watching things at the commission for a while now. It looks like the situation came to a head this week. Former President Zuma asked for the chairperson to recuse himself, and the chairperson says what?
Well, Bramike, as you say, for me, really, everything came to its head. As I was saying to you offline, as far as I'm concerned, this for me today was the ultimate fate of this commission. A lot of events are going to follow that will let whatever report that comes out of it rather, you know, pointless, if I may put it that way, because the reality is that the former President Zuma this week came with a strategy to put forward the application for the recusal of the chairperson. The chairperson, of course, rejected it with the reasons that he put forward, and now the former president has said he will be exercising his legal rights to take that particular ruling dismissing his application to court, which is going to be a long and tedious process, and may lead to him actually not even giving his testimony by the end of the commission. Remember, the commission has got a lifespan up to March next year now. And
But help us here. Before we go far, Mawande, let us talk about, hold us by the hand here. So the issue was what? That ex-President Zuma was saying the Deputy Chief Justice must recuse himself because?
Well, he was making he was putting that application on several grounds, but the overarching argument was that the Deputy Chief Justice is biased, one, because so claims former President Zuma, there's personal and family historical relations between the two of them. Secondly, that he has been leading on witnesses that testify against the former president. And then, thirdly, that the two of them have interacted even at a professional and social level before. And then, and that the selection of the witnesses for the commission points to a direction that they are intended to bury him, if I would quote his senior counsel advocate, Moses Kakana. So those were mainly the grounds that they were advancing to say is the reason that Deputy Chief Justice Zondo must recuse himself.
And did at any point did he say what must happen? You know, hypothetically, let's say Deputy Chief Justice Zondo had agreed to step aside or recuse himself. Did Jacob Zuma say what he wanted should happen instead?
Well, of course, their main intention was to have the Deputy Chief Justice Raymond Zondo recuse himself. But on Monday, during the arguments, Advocate Moses Kagane did say that there's a realization that if that happens, it may create a huge, legal conundrum, given as to who must appoint a replacement and how, given the complication and the complexity of the remedial action of the public protector that gave rise to the formation of this commission. Therefore, at the time, Advocate Kakane had argued that instead of maybe the Deputy Chief Justice recusing himself, they may find a way to say they create an environment that will show a sensitivity towards the former president. But at the time, the commission's head of legal team, Advocate Paul Pretorius, I countered that argument, saying that if you seek the recusal, then there can only be two outcomes. It's either it is granted or it is dismissed. And indeed, as we now know, it was dismissed.
And did the chairperson of the commission give his reasons? You know, so what are some of the reasons why he dismissed the application?
Yeah, well, basically, the Chief Justice Raymond Zondo, actually dealt with all the grounds on which the former president was moving from, in particular on the basis of bias that former President Zuma was claiming. The Deputy Chief Justice Raymond Zondo says that if the former president had issues about the so-called personal relations, which are now confirmed that they are sisters to which they have some romantic relationships, the two of them who are sisters, but that's neither here nor there. But if those are issues of long time ago, so the Deputy Chief Justice Raymond Zondo was saying that if he had a problem with that particular arrangement, he should have raised such an issue back in 2018 in January, when he affirmed Deputy Chief Justice Zondo, whose name was forwarded to him by Chief Justice Mokgweng Mokgweng. So he dismissed that one, and then he dismissed the issue of the leading on of witnesses that the former president was alleging, by saying that as the chairperson, he was entitled to ask questions from witnesses and to seek clarification on the evidence that they put forward for his full understanding, so that it prepares him properly for writing an appropriate report. And then also dismiss the issue of the pecking order of witnesses, saying it was neither here nor there. Witnesses can come in whichever order, because in any case, whoever that they implicate is given an opportunity and time to come with their version, be it disputing or affirming whatever they are saying. But at the core, Mike, there is a technical issue now that I think is also going to be central in the review application by the former president. It is the issue of the allegation that Deputy Chief Justice Zondo became, if I put it in sports terms, became a player, a goalkeeper, and a referee, and a coach in the same match.
In terms of what in particular? In terms of the general work of the commission, or about a specific issue around Jacob Zuma?
No, about this specific issue, because remember now, the argument, at the core of their argument, which I think is going to be the crux of their review application, is the fact that they say now the Deputy Chief Justice in this matter, the matter was about him. So he had it, he presided over the hearing of a matter against him, a complaint against him. And then by reading the statement that he read on Monday, putting his version, they say through that he became a witness. And by issuing the ruling today, they say he became a judge, and they find that to be inappropriate, and that he was conflicted, that he can't be all these things at once. So I think that, for me, that is the legal point that is going to be very interesting in how the court presides over that. The other issues of bias, I think the courts are going to affirm the ruling of the Deputy Chief Justice Raymond Zondo, but the technicality is that particular point of conflict.
And you think the strategy here is at which point now? Jacob Zuma's strategy, where is he going now? What's his next step now?
Well, obviously, his strategy now is well on course. It all seems like he'll never appear until this commission comes to an end, because now they are going to court. to the High Court to review, to apply to launch an application for review of this particular ruling, a process which will take quite some time to conclude. At the same time, simultaneously, they said that they will be lodging a complaint against Deputy Chief Justice Raymond Zondo on the point of him being a judge, a witness, and an adjudicator, as they put it. So all those things are going to take their own course, which will take some time. You'll remember that, especially the JSC, we still have a case, 12-year-old case, of the Western Cape Judge President, John Thorpe. So I don't know how that process will move as far as Deputy Chief Justice Zondo is concerned at the JSC, but the court one will run its course, which may not be finished by the time he issues the report, a report of which I suspect that the former president will also take on judicial review, which will also run for months and months and months. And on taking the report to review, I believe he's not going to be the only one. A former chairperson of SAA, Tutumien, has put on the record recently when she appeared at the commission that she will be reviewing the final report. Therefore, you can just say that this is going to go on and on and on and on until probably South Africans even forget that there was ever a so-called Zondo Commission investigating state capture, corruption and fraud.
So essentially you are saying that the whole point of what Jacob Zuma is doing is to avoid giving evidence, basically, and answering questions, no matter how long it takes to delay things.
Absolutely, that is the clear strategy. We may differ as people as to why he's doing that. He may say he's well within his right. In fact, he is legally, he's got this right. It's not like he's doing anything outside the constitution or the law. Everyone who feels hard done in one way or the other, they're entitled to exhaust the legal, platforms that are there in the country. On that one, he's well within his right. But as to what are the political intentions of him doing so, it's also an issue for debate. He may argue, as he's always argued, that he feels that the commission itself is a political platform to lynch him and bury him. So perhaps that could be his motivation. In fact, he claims that is his motivation not to want to partake in the proceeding, that he doesn't believe in his credibility and legitimacy, in that it is a fair process that is interested in getting into issues of corruption and fraud.
Hey, Andy Siwe, do you agree? Umawande, the whole strategy all along has been really about not having to sit in the witness stand and answer questions. Do you agree that that's where Jacob Zuma is wanting to go?
That is one thing that it appears to be the whole point of former President Jacob Zuma's strategy, Bramaik. Actually, Mawande covered me, because I think that's the only thing I'm bringing to the table. The fact that it would appear that President Zuma is not fond of being held to account. There is a history of him doing this in the courts. We had the so-called spy tapes court matter that has dragged since 2009, and he's done and appealed and has done everything that is possible to delay that process. And we are seeing a similar strategy here. As somebody who covers parliament, President Zuma would only go to parliament because the rules forced him to appear and account in parliament. And even then, when we appeared, we know that he never really answered questions. He would bring in his meanders, in inverted commas. So he is a man who's not big on explaining.
George Gochwin.
Yes, exactly. So he has a history of refusing to be held to account. And obviously, this is clear, as Mawande says it. He is going to appeal, because now, what they're taking to the JSC is a completely different matter. He has not said anything about all the allegations that have been made about him. We have not even started with those matters. So, but also the issue of the timing. You ask yourself, why did he agree to this charge when he knew all these things about Zondo? Because these friendships and all other issues are things that happened many, many years ago. So when he was given a name by the Chief Justice, why did he not flag these issues? He appeared before this commission in July last year. What has changed between that appearance and this and this appearance this week? So you can just see that the one thing that is not going to happen is Jacob Zuma appearing to give testimony.
Let's take a break now, and when we come back, we go to the other big story this week, which is the one that relates to Shepherd Bushiri and his wife escaping from South Africa to avoid facing charges around money laundering and fraud.
I understand very deeply that yourselves and South Africans are very aggrieved and angry about this Bushiri matter. I must assure you. On the day he was given bail, I was very, very angry and dejected, and still am, because I never believed in my wildest dream that Bushiri would be given bail, because I suspected what will happen. So, but in that anger, I'm sure we should not cut our noses to spite our faces. People do visit and remain in countries and visit and go and do other things, etc., etc. As long as we'll be able to account for them, that's why we're able to account that one person who came with the president did not board at Waterkloof, three did not board at O.R. Tambo. We are not reporting it as a miracle. It has happened before. We have done that ourselves when we visit other countries.
Welcome back to the Sunday Times Politics Weekly. We go now straight to our second story of the week, the dramatic escape of self-styled prophet Shepherd Bushiri and his wife from South Africa, where they were facing a multi-million rand fraud and money laundering case. With me, for the conversation, of course, is political journalist Umawande Amashabalala, as well as our political correspondent based in Cape Town, Andisiwe Makinana. We had drama during the week where we were told that Shepherd Bushiri had managed to flee the country. I thought that when somebody is on bail, there are conditions, and those conditions are meant to stop them running away in the first place. How does such a thing happen?
Pramak, that is a question that I think every person in South Africa is asking themselves. How did it happen? But I think we are also maybe not being honest with ourselves, because even our newspaper, the Sunday Times, has run an article front page with front page pictures where people are just walking right through our borders. You don't even have to jump over. It's like literally walking through an open door. So I don't know why we are surprised as much, because we've known that our South Africa's borders are porous. The government knows it. We've got all these people in our country who do not have legal documentation. So somebody like Bushiri, who is now facing, I think it's a two-pronged investigation, because besides the fraud, corruption, money laundering charges that are in court, there is another matter in another court where his immigration status or residency status is also under question. So if you are facing these questions into your being in South Africa and your business in South Africa, obviously you would, escape. So the question is, where were the Hawks? Where was Home Affairs? And we all know they've never really done their work. We had recently had a 37 million rand fence at Bite Bridge, and some call it a washing line, because that's what you could use it for. It really doesn't stop anyone from coming to this country. So what I'm trying to say is there's more questions than answers about how he left this country.
But you essentially you're saying that we shouldn't be surprised, because of the real situation, real life situation that we know in terms of the, how we manage our borders, for example, and how we manage immigration generally. And I wonder, just come in here. This incident has been quite embarrassing for South Africa.
Well, definitely, Pramak, it has been embarrassing. But for me, what is lacking in the whole debate in the country is what this is just my opinion. I do want to say I believe that Bushiri didn't do this thing alone. I believe that there was involvement of politics, or be it politics as in politicians or government administration, you know, officials at the highest level, because this is no ordinary human being. This is a Shepherd Bushiri, a guy with lots of money, a guy with lots of influence in his own country of birth, Malawi, where he sponsors politicians and their political campaigns, in particular the current sitting president in that particular country of Malawi, who also happened to have been in the country in and around the time the escape is alleged to have happened. So I believe that those things should not be read in isolation. The political events around the escape itself, the delays that were occasioned in when the president of Malawi had to go back, what was that all about? And is it really a coincidence that Bushiri would escape during a time of a state visit by high-ranking president and ministers of his particular country? To me, that is where the issue is at. But of course, government will do anything to cover up whatever their involvement was. But I dare say, somewhere, somehow, our government was involved in abetting or aiding the escape of Bushiri. It can't, well, not the government in general, but a few individuals at government or political level were involved in aiding and abetting this escape. For me, that is the critical point. But as I say, those are the same people now who we are trusting to tell us what happened, which is never going to happen. They will find a scapegoat. Typical case like the landing of the Gupta plane in Waterkloof Air Force. It was the same thing. They found a low-hanging fruit as a scapegoat. This is what I expect to happen in this case as well. Although, of course, they are not the same cases, but as I say, it is highly unlikely that a Bushiri would have escaped on his own. And because there's still no clear air as to whether he escaped through the ground, as in escaping at the border, or he flew over with the president of Malawi, those issues are still hanging in the air. And I dare say we may never know the real facts as it relates to how he escaped and the mode of transport that he used to escape.
And this way, you know, then the matter goes to parliament, predictably, I suppose. By you know, because you are in Cape Town, you're watching parliament for us. You had a ringside seat of the political reaction in parliament. What was it like?
At the end of that 2-hour meeting, Pramike, there were more questions than there were answers. Because the first question really is how. How did it happen? How did he leave? That question remains unanswered. But I also think the urgent convening of that parliamentary meeting was, I think, to a large extent, the embarrassment that had been caused to South Africa by this incident. So people try to be seen to be doing something, because that meeting, it sort of gave us a picture to a commotion, because we all learned over the weekend that there was a delay of the flight back to Malawi, but it wasn't clear over what. So the minister gave us a picture there around the Malawian president delegation and the confusion over which port they could board from and so on. But I just feel like these are side issues. And as Mawande says, I'm not going to go as far as saying maybe there was involvement by our government or government officials, but there are so many questions. It can't be coincidence that this happened at the same time the president was here. And the whole issue around the delays and people that were not supposed to be on board that flight, but who showed up at Waterkloof. You know, you ask yourself, as a South African, I can't just go to Waterkloof Air Base. I know that it's not something that you don't just rock up at such places. It's a national key point. We are respected. So you ask yourself, how do foreign nationals just show up as a group and demand to, you know, to board a presidential plane from that place? So it's like, what kind of a country are we? Why aren't people respecting our institutions, you know? So there are so many questions, Pramike, about this whole thing. And just before Amina called me, I was in I'm writing a story from the post-cabinet briefing where Minister Lamola is adamant that they will get to the bottom of this. They are working with his government, but he too cannot answer those questions of how did it happen.
Okay. Now tell me, Maunde, by your reading, do you think we're ever going to get Shepherd Bushiri back to stand trial here?
I think we can, Bramaiko, but I think when it happens, it will happen on his own terms. If you watch the address that he did when he got to Malawi, at the core of his complaint is the five investigators who are leading the investigation of fraud, corruption, and money laundering against him, whom he alleges have sought bribes from him and stuff like that. And I believe that as the horse trading now happens between the South African government and the Malawian government, at the core of that horse trading will be a Bushiri who says, I'm committed to go back to South Africa to face justice as long as you remove those five investigators. And knowing our government, I foresee them bending over to grant that particular request if push comes to shove. But as things stand, I think if Bushiri doesn't get his way, he will never set foot in South Africa again.
Well, never a dull moment in our politics in South Africa. That's all we have time for on the Sunday Times Politics Weekly this week. And I'd like to thank my guests, Andiswe Makinana, a political correspondent based in Cape Town, and in Johannesburg, political journalist Umawande Amashabalala. Thank you very much, guys, for joining us on the Sunday Times Politics Weekly. And by the way, you can catch our podcast on iono.fm, Spotify, Google Podcast, Apple Podcast, or wherever you prefer to get your podcasts. Until next time, stay safe, sanitize, wear the mask, and avoid crowded places. I'm Mike Siluma, signing off.